Good morning. This is Arlene Francis, and all you WOR devotees are going to be so pleased to learn that my guest today is an old friend, Gene Shepherd, the man who probably logged more hours on this station than anyone before or since, and still has enough words left in reserve to spend the balance of the hour at the microphone with me here today. Welcome, dear Shep.
I'm delighted to be here. I'll tell
you. Crazy about your outfit.
This is like old home week, you know, except they've painted the walls and they put doors on the things here.
And handles.
It's very official now. They have a sign on the men's room that says men.
Yeah.
Before it was just scratched in chalk.
Now you know where you're going. Everything's perfect. But I am referring actually to a new book of short pieces just published by Doubleday and entitled Fistful of Big Newtons. Now, a bit later on, we're going to have some exciting news of another nature that came as a surprise to me when I was told before we went on the air, so I know it will be a surprise and pleasure for you to learn about it. But as former listeners and current readers will agree, anything sets this fellow off that I have with me today in the manner of Marcel Proust, actually.
Great Scott.
Yes. A kind of, I'm not comparing it to Proust all the way down the line, but a kind of tea cake called Madeleine did it for Proust. And now we're going to hear about the Shepherd's source of inspiration. And please don't call the Fig Newton a cookie.
Oh, no, of course not.
All right.
That's almost obscene.
Then let us in on the Fig Newton gambit.
Well, this book actually it all takes place in the Lincoln Tunnel during rush hour. Now, I don't know whether you've ever driven through the Lincoln Tunnel during rush hour.
I hate it.
Yes, of course. And it's purgatory. There's never winter, never summer, never spring in there. And you're suspended. And there's trucks blowing stuff in your face and guys behind you are flashing their lights. And mysteriously, everything is stopped. And the little lights above are flashing yellow. Somebody has blown a tire up there or something. And your mind starts to go. And goes in many different directions. And that's what happens in this book. The eye in there begins to review his life. How he really blew it that finally led him here. And among other things, he goes back to his college life. Because there's a car ahead of him that says, "Go, Rutgers, go." It's on the, Rutgers Red Knights, go. He sees the bumper sticker and he says, "Oh, look at those slobs up there. They don't know when they've got it so good." And he remembers back in his dormitory days. And the only thing he had one night to stave off total death by boredom was a one-pound box of Fig Newtons. Mm-hmm. And at 2 in the morning in the rain in the Big Ten campus, he began to eat Fig Newtons. And that's how it all started.
Well, now, do you find memory mixing with desire every time you encounter a Fig Newton yourself?
Well, you see, it's a love-hate relationship, because what actually happened in the story was not, it was a disaster, as a matter of fact, as a result of the Fig Newtons.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Fig Newton can do it almost as badly as a fifth of Jim Beam under the right circumstances.
But don't drive with the Jim Beam,
ever.
And you can drive with a Fig Newton.
Maybe.
There are so many subjects in this book that act as a trigger, this voluble Gene Shepherd across from me.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, very much.
Well, thank
it's
you.
It's just, and it's very funny.
That's
very
two
witty.
Years of work there. And
it is, and it's a nice, slim book.
Oh, that's not a nice, actually, that's a conventional book length. That's the new kind of books they're making.
Oh, I hope so.
Well, that's for library. You see, they found out that libraries have a terrible time with space these days.
Oh.
And so the new book is actually, that's a conventional length book, but what they've done is narrowed the margins. They've run the chapters all in one long line. They've used high quality paper, so it's a conventional length book.
It just seems, we have so many heavy books here, it just seems to me that every time some publisher calls and says, "Will you do such and such a book?" we always say, "How many pages is it?" Because we do so many books, and, Gene and I like to read all
sure
the books.
Sure you do, I know that. It's
and
unusual.
It makes it just impossible to...
That is a conventional length book, actually is. When I was sitting in on the production meeting, it may be an interesting story for somebody in the Times or whatever, but I was sitting in a production meeting, and the production chief over Doubleday came in and said that they have redesigned their books entirely for space purposes and for library purposes. And, yeah. and also, it's obviously cheaper to make to ship a smaller book
of
than a bigger book.
Of course.
But it's actually better quality. The paper's much
paper's
better quality.
Nice. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And the cuts and the prints, you know, all my drawings are in this thing.
I have to compliment you. I was going to save those till later, but they are just lovely.
Well, they paid special attention on those cuts, and so...
I mean, they give the book a certain chic, if you don't mind my putting it that way.
Okay.
About your fine drawings, as long as you've mentioned them yourself, does this come to restricting yourself to just the essentials? They're so simple, the drawings.
That's a good question, Arlene, because... one of my best friends is Shel Silverstein.
Uh-huh.
And Shel and I used to go drawing in the village together, along with Don Kingman.
Oh, yes.
And the essence of a good line drawing is, of course, directness and simplicity, mm-hmm. but also attitude.
Yeah.
To do a face that has a statement that you've made about this guy.
Yeah.
Or like, for example, the lemons in the book. Did mm-hmm. you see all those lemons? That requires... basically experience at drawing.
Uh-huh.
And when... See, I learned to draw as a child. My father was a cartoonist for the Chicago Trib.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in the editorial cartoon department there, and when I was a little kid, I'm 2 years old, and he'd sit there at the table with me and show me how to draw things before I could hardly talk.
How marvelous, yeah.
Well, when I went to school... I just assumed everybody could draw it. I never thought that people
Why isn't
could
that
draw.
Kid working in something, you'd say to yourself?
Yeah, and the teacher would get up there and start telling people how to draw a butterfly or a pumpkin or something like that. I'd knock it off. But it stuck with me all through my life. And at one time, I did a series of very serious line drawings, you know, for the Village Voice. I did cityscapes for them. I did hundreds of them, and they used to run on the front page.
But you Now, for example, you have a drawing of a chair in this book.
A director's chair.
A director's chair. It is just ideal, that picture.
Thank
it
you.
It is so simple. And if that's what they should use in ads, that kind of drawing.
That's been an old fight. I was approached by an ad agency here a couple of years ago to do a series of drawings for a big hamburger chain. And they were funny, really nice drawings.
Uh-huh.
And the... head of the company looked at it and he says, "We're paying all that for this? It just seemed too simple." So they wound up with all these fustian things, you know, colors and
They're
guys
really
in clown suits.
Not attractive.
Of course not. But it's hard to sell simplicity.
Do you have models in the art world that you're partial to?
You mean people I like as artists? Oh, sure.
But any that have influenced you? You must?
Yes. As a matter of fact, hard to say this, but actually the real influence I've had is Matisse. To pull a real big name out of the hat, but
I can even see that in the chair that I was just talking about.
Well, thank you. I love his directness, and I also love his sense of space.
Uh-huh. But you don't work in color the way
Yes,
you
do.
Yes, I do. Do you?
Oh, yes. In fact...
Since these are all, you know...
Well, they're black and white, because that's a production thing. But in fact, an ex-manager of the station here has a big color... drawing I did of the plaza.
Oh?
It was a huge drawing of the whole street there, you see, the plaza.
The garden, the fountain.
15, the fountain and everything else. It's all done in color. You may remember him, Bob Smith.
Sure.
And I gave him this gift because it had appeared as an illustration for another book.
Mm-hmm.
So I do work in color, but I love black and white more, really.
There's another subject that I wanted to talk to you about, and that is your, I think, one of your favorite subjects, cars, which you talk about. Which appeals to you the most?
Arlene, cars seem to me to be as part of the life of the 20th century man as the horse was to the 19th century person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily go bananas over cars per se, but they really represent our time. Everywhere in the world you go, it's not just here. The great desire of everybody that I met in Nigeria back in the 60s when I was over there in 61 was to have a car, the idea of having a car.
A lot of them in Nigeria do have them now.
They do, and they did then, but it was much more important to them than it is to us because we take for granted. And so I always have felt that the car... If you could take your average person of this period, of this time, of his life, let's say he's 70 years old, today. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know how many hours he has spent in a car in his lifetime.
Yeah, uh-huh.
An immense amount of hours. Probably as much almost as he did at home.
Can you think of any way we can reduce the traffic in New York?
Well, yes. I think a good machine gun strafing and maybe some flamethrowers.
I wasn't planning on going quite that far.
You know, there was a suggestion once that what we ought to do, one guy made a suggestion. It was Henry Barnes, the ex-traffic director of New York, remember?
Yes, sure.
He said, what we ought to do is have a whole series of planes fly over New York one day with nerve gas, and then when everybody's knocked out, pave it all over and start over again.
Well, they could do a little paving anyway. This is another favorite subject covered not only by Gene Shepard on his radio shows, but also in this new book, Fistful of Fig Newtons, and that's the Johnson & Smith catalog. Now, A, what is it, or was it? And B, why does it turn you on so?
Well, it's another thing that I think is very... It's hardly been mentioned, you know, in American letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, well, no, I'm seriously, because it the Johnson & Smith catalog is like the Sears Roebuck of mm-hmm. the practical joke world. They're in Racine, Wisconsin, and they are still in existence, by the way.
Oh, they are?
Oh, yes. Matter of fact, there was a recent ad in the TV guide of last week. It showed a guy with his false teeth flying out. It says, do you lay an egg at a party? We'll get the joke book from Johnson & Smith. So,
is that where you got all your early material?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, you'd be surprised, Arlene. There thousands of comics all throughout the ages have gotten their material from the 10,000 jokes issued by Johnson & Smith of Racine, Wisconsin. And they sold exploding cigars. They still do. They sold... rubber, whoopee cushions and all that kind of stuff. It just appealed to the gross evil side of man, and I just thought that the Johnson & Smith catalog was a very American thing, true Americana.
It really had an influence on you.
Well, not on me particularly, but I do think that millions of people used to buy little things to throw their voice and bird whistles ink blots, of course, yes, and little things that the dog left under the coffee table. This is all Johnson & Smith. Caters to your
terrible.
Evil side.
But all kids of your childhood years subscribed to...
Oh, well, yeah. You didn't subscribe. They had a catalog, a yearly catalog. See, it was a big, thick catalog.
Yeah.
And each page said things like, for example, it'd be a whole page, it would say, make money. Are you tired of being poor? Raise worms in the basement. And then they'd show a picture of a guy with all his money coming out of his pocket. Underneath it would say, Mr. L.D. of Leedsburg, Mississippi, made over $4 last week in his spare time raising worms. You can do this, too. Well, you know, when you're 8 years old or nine, and
sure.
you're sitting there, and that's his heady stuff.
You've got a basement full of worms, being not careful. Has it ever occurred to you that your childhood was probably everybody's childhood, more or less?
Well,
you know, your musings about alphabetical order seating must surely touch everyone whose last name begins, you know, a little far down in the alphabet.
I have often said, Arlene, there is no such... Look, you've got Steve Allen, you've got Dick Cavett, you've got Johnny Carson. They're all up there in the APs.
There
is no Chester Wisniewski TV show. Because for all of his life, he has considered himself as part of the vast audience. He's even looking at the kids up in the front, you know, the hands going up and all that.
And why did you make friends with a fellow by the name of Schwartz?
Yes, of course. Don't ask me about Helen Weathers. She was the only girl in our alphabetical ghetto. I remember... Helen was 4 feet nine, 205 pounds. She could sweat at will, by the way. Everyone used to say, Helen, sweat. And she'd sweat.
Oh, Gene.
Sorry, life is gross, Arlene.
Oh, dear. What were some of the other stars of your childhood days?
Stars?
Miss Shields. Who was she?
Miss Shields. Well, she's a classic second grade teacher.
And no relation to Brooke.
No, hardly. Well, maybe later. I mean, but I can always remember my second grade classroom. Here I was at the age of seven, you know, in second grade, and already I'm behind the eight ball, because here I am. Now, I don't know it, you say, at that point.
No, of course.
I'm going to the school named Warren G. Harding, named after the worst president in history.
He was a failure.
Of course. Other kids are going to the George Washington School, you know, Lincoln School. I imagine there's some poor little kids going to the Richard Nixon School right now. They don't know it, you know. And I'm sitting in the back, and Miss Shields was tall and thin, and she looked like she was made out of Lady Esther face powder. It's kind of, she had this purple Brillo pad on her head, you know, she had this hair. And her voice would always go, then you'd hear the scratching of the, you know, on the chalk. And you'd hear about one word every 2 weeks. She'd go, Peru.
Wasn't she the one that thought your name was Eugene?
Eugene. She says, I will not call anyone by their nickname in this class. Your name is Eugene. I says, it's J-E-A-N, it's Gene. And for weeks, she'd say, Eugene? And I'd sit there squatting. I had no idea she was talking to me.
I'm going to pay attention to my sponsors now. And when we come back, I want to learn about the other shepherds, the Mama Shepherd and the Papa Shepherd, Randy and so forth.
Okay.
In the remaining 30 seconds, have you got something conclusive to say to us?
Be brave.
Through it all.
Through it all. Just hang in there, you know. Keep those paddles going.
And you be a great success. When whatever you undertake, I look forward to the March showing of your
film.
Yeah, it's
called The Great American 4th of July and Other Disasters.
And the book that we've talked about today is called A Fistful of Fig Newtons. Thank you, dear Gene Shepherd. And this is Arlene Francis on WOR New York. Dear Gene Shepherd has been resting, so now he's ready to go again, aren't you,
Gene? I'm
set. And we're talking about Gene's new book, Mean Gene, has written a funny book that isn't mean at all. It's called A Fistful of Fig Newtons, and it's published by Doubleday. I do really love Fig Newtons, I must say.
I think we all have a secret thing for them.
Do you think so?
I think...
And those that say they don't like them, there's something the matter with
them.
Few
will admit to it, because it's sort of a proletarian thing, you know.
I said I wanted you to talk about your family. Tell about the part of America where you grew up and about...
Well...
And her wardrobe.
I grew up in the south side of Chicago. Actually, it's the northern Indiana. Most people who listen to me or read me, when you use the word Indiana, they get this image of barefoot boy with cheek. But I came from a part of Indiana that had all the charm of Newark. I mean, oh yes, it's the steel mill part of Indiana, mean and tough, and grew mean, tough people. And I remember my mother looking out the gray skies, you know, and you'd see the flickering of the steel mill flames in the air, and she's looking out, she's fixing the meatloaf for dinner, and she's wearing
sounds
her bathrobe.
Like,
yeah, and she's wearing this bathrobe. She always wore this rump-sprung Chinese red chenille bathrobe. It had a little petrified egg on the lapel, you know. She was wearing her mother uniform. She's hanging over the sink, and her hair is up in these aluminum rheostats. And she's looking out over the gray skies. And up on our refrigerator, we had this cracked radio from Sears Roebuck, a little white one, you know, it said night radio on it, and a tape on it, and it had a hum, and you'd hear this hum, and out of the hum, you'd hear, sweet Leilani, heavenly flower, it's Bing. And one day I said to my mother, about eight, this has become a family legend, I said, Ma, she said, yes, what's a Leilani?
Did she know?
Well, no, she turned to me and she says, you shouldn't ask questions like that. It was romance as far as she was concerned. And she has a Brillo pad in one hand, you know, and a plumber's
so
helper in the other. And she's fighting evil.
Now, in the meantime, your father is probably at the bowling alley.
Well, he was a bowler, I'll tell you. And but I can, he was primarily a White Sox fan.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you have to understand, this is a religion, you see, because it's basically a religion of losers. Because my father was born, lived his entire life, and the White Sox never in his whole life were above sixth place. And I remember him one day, it's a beautiful spring day, if Indiana ever gets a beautiful spring day in the steel mill world, and he came home from work, and he's got the trib, you know, the Chicago trib, and he slings it out over the table and snaps open a can of Blatz, and he looks down, and it says, Sox drop two to Cleveland. Just looks around, and I remember him muttering, he says, here it is May, and they're 34 games out of first. May. They only played 38 games up to that point. And it set the whole tenor of his life, you see. And in a sense, it set the whole tone of my life. Because as a kid, I never thought in terms of anybody winning. And it was only until I got out to the East that I realized out here they expect to win.
Yes.
And they're furious. They fire the manager if they don't win the third game of the World Series. Do you know that the White Sox, last World Series that they were in, Eisenhower was in office? I'm serious. It was 1959.
Really?
And prior to that, Arlene, the World Series, the only one they'd been in, Woodrow Wilson was in office, and what's worse, the Sox threw that series. That's the Black Sox. So if you think being a Met fan is bad, my Lord.
Oh, Lord, that is so funny. You have a little brother, too. We haven't heard
Randy
from him yet.
Randy spent most of his pre-7-year-old age under the daybed. His art form was the whine, and he's always my mother would say, "Now eat." Oh, I could kill him. And she always used to say, "Take Randy," to me. You know, he's younger. And he was always about 2.5 feet behind me and just off to my left all the time. I'd go on a date and he'd be right by me.
Whining away.
He could make his nose run at will, you know. Just,
he could have gone with that lady that could sweat at will.
He grew up to be 6'3". And he reads about himself and this stuff and he says, "Gee, people laugh at me, you know, when you read that."
He doesn't whine anymore.
No. He makes others whine.
Now, to get to some more contemporary inspiration.
Right.
How much do certain... I'm afraid to ask you this. How much do certain TV commercials set you off?
Oh, constantly. I think TV commercials are... I love these... for example, I love these commercials where they say, "It's Miller time." You know, and you see all these handsome linemen. They all have these way blow-set hair jobs and all that. They're all at their orange faces. Yeah. And then they go off into the sunset. They sit around these bars. And then you just take a look at the kind of bars and stuff that I have gone to as a kid working in the steel mills. When it's Miller time, see? When it's Miller time in the steel mill world, they just sit there. Actually, it's Boilermaker time. You know, a shot and a beer. And I just...
A Boilermaker is whiskey and beer, isn't it?
Boilermaker is, you take this, the worst kind of whiskey you can get. It's
raw, like, whiskey.
Yeah, it's a bourbon of the worst type.
Yeah.
And you just toss off the bourbon, and while it's still going down, just before the flame hits your gut, you take a great big slug of the beer, which quenches it, you see.
Oh, I get it.
Oh, it's an elegant combination.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you on that. That's not the only commercial that drives you crazy.
Oh, no, there's lots of them. One of my favorite commercials, I've always been sorry that it's been off, is this little guy that used to row around in the John, remember, wearing in this little rubber rowboat.
Don't you remember that? I don't even remember that.
Well, you didn't get that. You're a very elegant lady. You didn't get those commercials on your set.
No.
But he used to row around, you see, and for some reason or other, he had a marimba band in his rowboat with him.
That sounds better than some of the modern ones.
Well, it wasn't that old. It was like a year and a half, 2 years
ago.
Really?
Yes. I never saw it.
And I often used to wonder how that guy, how he auditioned for that commercial. How do you look on a rubber rowboat? Opening the commercial, you'd see her face, and she'd look down, and she'd say, "Oh, for heaven's sakes, blue water." You remember that. Come on, Arlene.
Oh, dear, you're funny.
Thank you.
Have you ever done any commercials?
I just finished one this morning. I just did a commercial for Yaga Sangria.
Oh, well, that's nice.
It's a very elegant commercial. Actually, it's a takeoff on...
Did you wear this outfit?
I did.
Now, he's wearing an orange shirt and a brown and white...
It's a corduroy. It's a Saks Fifth Avenue, for heaven's sake.
Well, the jacket's very handsome.
And thank you.
Well, I presume you wore the orange shirt for color.
Yeah, they wanted it. This is their shirt. This is the agency's shirt. I have to send it back.
I don't think so.
Terrible shirt. Doesn't have sleeves.
No, wash it in blue water.
Second-rate agency.
Well, that's nice that you did the sangria, but you've done others.
Oh, many, many. In fact, I kind of tapered off because I was getting too ubiquitous. In fact, Philip Doherty of the Times did a piece here a year or so ago about the ubiquitous voice on... TV commercials, and he wrote about me. And I just felt that I was being overexposed, so I'm going to do a few now.
But that was a voiceover, wasn't it?
Well, I did that. I did a lot of on-camera things, primarily out of New York. In fact, for over 4 years, I was the on-camera character for the Chicago Daily News commercial.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Actually, it was the Sun-Times. I'm sorry, it was the Sun-Times. And I played different characters. One time I'd be a dynamic reporter. And the next I'd be sitting there, I'd be writing the Advice to the Lovelorn column. And then I played a commuter reading the paper. And it was
a varied existence.
Oh, yes.
You might say.
That's the joys of acting.
I have a varied number of commercials.
Oh, great. Good
dear
for
friend.
You.
It's December, and that means the big December deals are happening right now at Stadium Home Appliances, New Jersey's price-busting GE dealer in West New York and Cliffside Park. You're going to stay with me now, Gene. Don't go away. There's a solid reputation for... I mean, I thought maybe you were leaving right away for the Stadium Home Appliance place. But he has a really solid reputation. And it's in West New York and Cliffside Park. And you can believe Stadium when they tell you they're offering some of their lowest prices of the year on GE refrigerators and washers and dryers and self-cleaning ovens and dishwashers. And they are cutting their already low prices even lower. So shop Stadium Home Appliances today for December deals on GE Food Saver refrigerator freezers with fresh food compartments, pot scrubber dishwashers with power scrub and salt food disposer, big savings on GE 2-in-1 filter flow washers and front-loading electric dryers, and in addition, a $75 cash rebate from GE on two new video cassette recorders. And afterwards, I'm going to ask you to explain this to me. Model 1 VCR 2006W and Model 1 VCR 1012W, all through December 31st. Stadium Home Appliances, 575 60th Street, West New York, and 665 Anderson Avenue, Cliffside Park. Well, in his day, Sam Breakstone was a very demanding man, which is why his cottage cheese tastes so good today. Breakstone's, well, let me see, it's just a smooth, a creamy style, it's delicious taste. Really comes from Breakstone's own sweet cream dressing. And its texture is so smooth and it's so creamy that they decided to call it just that, smooth and creamy style cottage cheese. Since Sam Breakstone was so demanding, quality and taste have been a Breakstone tradition ever since 1882. And this week, Grand Union Food Market will have Breakstone cottage cheese on sale at just 99 cents a one-pound container. That's small, regular, or California large, curd, or low-fat. Also on sale this week at Grand Union, USDA choice beef boneless bottom round roast, shoulder roast, or chuck roast for only $1.79 a pound. And you'll find Grand Union stores all decorated with red dot specials for your holiday season food shopping. And when you see the dot, you save a lot. Now, you won't believe that I am through with that bevy of commercials, and it may seem like an awful lot, but it's holiday time, you understand. And so I want you to explain what I said before on that. Do you know what a VC, or maybe you don't know what a VCR 2006W model is?
No, I haven't the slightest idea, but I do like Sam Breakstone's dog.
Oh, that's right, the dog. Well, they're not selling the dog.
Remember the little dog that comes out and bites them?
They are just selling... What are you handing me, Miss?
Your commercial's back again. I was just...
No, I can't do another batch of commercials now. I've got to talk to Gene now.
Yes.
Gene is here. Gene Shepherd. And the reason he's here, we're lucky enough to get him today, is because Doubleday has just published A Fistful of Fig Newtons. Now, what I want to ask you... is about the exciting news. I said that I was going to be able to tell the audience something other than the new book, and it is your film. Now, tell me about that.
Listen, I'm really proud of this. We've been working for 2 years on this. PBS, that's the public broadcasting system, you know, has undergone a great revolution within the organization, and they're really doing something very... it's ambitious, really. It's the biggest thing they've ever done. It's called Playhouse.
But now that they're cutting back, isn't that hard for them to do?
Not really, because they've decided to do their own production.
Instead of all the English, huh?
Right, exactly. And they've gotten even some money from the BBC on this. It's
terrific.
An exchange deal.
Uh-huh.
And they're very involved, and they've picked what they consider leading American writers, including Updike and Cheever.
Good.
And they've written original plays for them. They're screenplays.
Mm-hmm.
And I was selected, and my film, which we've been working on now for 2 years, really, roughly, off and on, will be broadcast the 16th of March. And we can, it's really, and I
But I mean, have you finished writing this already?
Oh, it's all done.
Oh, it's all done.
Well, of course, we're talking about shooting and editing and everything else. Oh, yes.
So they're going to allow, what, like a 4 or 6 week length of time to do the shooting, or are they?
Oh, it's already done. It's been shot.
Oh,
I'm saying we've been working on this film. Oh, yeah.
I thought since it wasn't going to be shown until March 16th that maybe it hadn't been shot yet.
Oh, no. No, this is not a television show, actually. It's done as an actual feature film. And will be released as a feature film in parts of the country, in the world.
Isn't that marvelous?
It's not just a TV show. It's not taped. It's on film. It's a real film. And it stars Jimmy Broderick, who most of you might remember as the father in The Family, that ABC show called Family. Excellent actor. Mm-hmm. Wonderful man.
And he's also a theater actor.
Very. Oh, yeah. Yes. In fact, when we first cast him, he was doing O'Neill at the Arena Theater in Washington.
That's it.
Very serious actor. And the guy there's a young fellow that plays the boy in this. He actually plays, see, I'm in it too. He plays me as a boy. See, I'm telling this story in this thing, and I'm an adult.
You're back in the tunnel now in your book, huh?
In a sense. It's a storytelling technique, and the kid is fascinating. He's a kid named Matt Dillon.
No, imagine him having that name.
That's his real name.
After the character.
His name is Matt Dillon. He's an actor named Matt Dillon.
I know that, but I mean, if he's a young boy, he is, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's 17.
Then Matt Dillon on television must have inspired the mother to call him that.
Not at all. It's an Irish name. He's named after his father, Matthew Dillon.
That's
it,
yes.
And he's always baffled when people say, well, you know, from the old TV, because he wasn't even born when Matt Dillon was on. But he is probably the hottest young American actor today in the teenage world. Well, he's 17, but he starred in a couple of big films. And did you see a film called My Bodyguard?
No.
Yeah, that was a big film. He played the evil bully in it.
Oh.
And he's, of course, the bully today is very sexy to young girls. They didn't go. And he became a big sex symbol with young 12-year-old girls. He also was the, you might say, the romantic lead in a film called My Little Darlings.
Oh, yes.
And with, what was her name, McNichol? Christy McNichol.
And he good played, actress.
Yes. And this kid is a good actor. Mm-hmm. He reminds me of a young Montgomery Clift, crossed, however, with a touch of John Garfield and a little, he's got a sardonic sense of humor, a little like Cary Grant. A strange combination.
Boy, I'll say, you've got everything in there.
Yeah, he's an odd kid. His name is Matt Dillon, and we cast him, and we started to shoot the film up in Boston. We didn't even know what we had on our hands. And all of a sudden, at 5 o'clock in the morning, in this terrible mill district of Boston, we're shooting the first scenes.
I know where it is.
Thousands of little girls came out of the weeds, and they were all screaming, Matt, Matt, Matt. And it was at that point I realized, you know,
you were an older man.
Well, not only that, the director who cast him had no idea that he had this kind of following.
Listen, Gene, I hate to tell you this. I have to stop because I'm going to do my closing commercials. If we're lucky, we may have a few minutes together at the end. As you can see, my commercials are rather abundant due to the holiday season.
I think that's fine.
And now, something that begins this very week, the 10th Annual Holiday Craft Sale, where homemade foods and desserts are on sale and a variety of live entertainment featured daily. Also, pottery and toys and dolls and jewelry and leather goods and clothing and blown glass and woodwork and household items. This is the 10th Annual Holiday Crafts Fair, and it takes place Thursdays through Sundays during the first 3 weeks of December in Ferris Booth Hall. You know where that is? That's Columbia University, 115th Street and Broadway in Manhattan. Now, there is an admission, a $3 donation, that is, and that is to benefit non-commercial radio station WBAI. The fair will run from noon till 9 p.m. daily, except Thursdays when the hours are 7 to 10 p.m. only.